From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Well, the Republican National Convention is over. The Democrats will rally next month. We'll discuss where Republicans in Illinois stand now and going forward with some new leadership. Also, Democrats are reeling as Joe Biden has refused calls to step aside as the presidential nominee, but the pressure on him is building. We'll talk about that and more coming up on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield. Charlie Wheeler is off this week. We have as our guest Dave McKinney. He's a reporter with WBEZ Public Radio. And Dave, thanks for being on once again.
Love being on, Sean. Thanks for having me.
Also, we have Kent Redfield. He's Professor Emeritus from the University of Illinois Springfield. And Kent's great to have you back with us as well.
Good to be here.
Dave, I'm going to start with you. You helped with the coverage of the convention. You weren't there in Milwaukee, but you followed it very closely. So I guess I'll just ask you, what was your takeaway?
Well, I think Republicans are feeling exceptionally unified, both at the national level and even at the state level, where the Republican Party has kind of been in the dumpster for 20 plus years. Aside from the Rauner time, the Illinois Republican Party has got its own infighting that has led to the, a new chairperson being appointed. They lack money. They're in super minorities in Springfield. And yet after this convention and seeing what's happened to the Democrats, they're getting a little bit of wind to their backs. So that was one takeaway. I've watched these conventions for a long time, and I don't think that I can't really remember one quite like the Republican convention, on the heels of the assassination attempt against Donald Trump. I mean, they had a really solid convention, the Republicans did, I think. And bringing out the families of the Afghan soldiers who died in the ambush as America was leaving Afghanistan, I thought was a powerful moment. Trump himself, they tried to control him, I think, with his speech, but after a while, after he got off the teleprompters, it kind of meandered back into familiar Trump that we hear at the rallies, and pretty divisive. But overall, they're feeling, hugely united, I think the Republicans are, and they're watching with delight at how the Democrats at the moment seem to be self-combusting.
Yeah. Kent, would you agree with that? And let's be, clear here. This is the third time now that Republicans have nominated Donald Trump to be their presidential candidate. But I get the feeling, like Dave was mentioning there, that there may be more excitement behind his campaign than I've actually seen the last two, because I think in 2016, there was a lot of people not sold on him in the party, but, thinking maybe he's got a chance. And then 4 years ago, I think the same thing. I think people feeling maybe that this wasn't going to work out this time. Right now, they seem to be very high on Donald Trump.
Yeah, and the visible people certainly are. The dissenting voices, pretty much, they've beaten them into submission, or, they've just given up. And so, there still is a lot of uncertainty about him within swing voters and certain aspects of the, the Republican Party. That definitely was not there during the convention. And, when DeSantis and Nikki Haley were on, one of the commentators, pretty uncharitably said, this is loser's night, where everybody comes and bows to the victor. The other thing is, in a normal convention season, you would have heavy counter programming from the other party. And that was just absent. The Democrats don't know who's going to lead them. And there just wasn't any kind of, they took ads off the air, and rightly so, right after the assassination attempt and stuff. And so, they had a pretty clean slate. And obviously, it would have been a stronger ending if you hadn't Trump hadn't gone off script into his normal kind of, rally, or one of his rally stump events and stuff. But it wasn't effective as it could have been. But in terms of energizing the base, it's hard to imagine how you could have done much more.
Yeah, Dave, you mentioned a change in the Illinois Republican Party. And, you know, Illinois is not one of those states. We've been to these conventions before. The states that are in play always get a lot of airtime. They're placed, their delegation on the floor is placed very close to the stage. And, you know, because basically they want to get a lot of attention out there and try to drive votes in those very close states. Illinois, most people assume, and I think Republicans do too, that it's going to go blue in December, in November. But there is some hope for optimism, it appears, within the party. We had a new chairperson named for the Illinois Republican Party, Kathy Salvey. People might remember that name. Tell us a little about her.
Well, I mean, Kathy Salvey is a lawyer in Illinois. She's ran for U.S. Senate against Tammy Duckworth and was defeated, you know, pretty soundly in that race. She was... you know, she's no stranger to being on the campaign trail. Before that, she traveled along with her husband, Al Salvey, in 1996 and Dick Durbin's first U.S. Senate campaign. So, I mean, she's been around politically for a long time in Illinois. And, you know, probably for this party right now, given where it's at, I mean, she's probably a pretty good choice to try to bring it together, because she has, you know, she has her own sort of conservative bona fides, but she's also... you know, she understands the art of politics, and you know, you've got to have in you know, the Ronald Reagan reference, you know, a big tent and accommodating all parts of the party, rather than the infighting, in order to be able to, you know, focus in on the common rival, the Democrats. I think that, you know, the big question for Democrats this year is, you know, in if things stay the way they are, and that's no certainty as we're taping this, because you know, everybody's waiting and watching to see if Joe Biden drops out of the race. But, you know, in the scenario where he would stay in the race, and if polling is accurate, and, you know, there are broad Democratic losses up and down the ticket, that could provide an opening for Illinois Republicans that they haven't seen in a long time. I mean, you know, would it be enough to rival what happened back in 1994 when, you know, the contract with America year and Republicans swept control of everything in state government? No, it would not. But would they be able to eat into the supermajorities that the Democrats have in both the House and the Senate? Quite possibly. And, you know, under the right circumstances, it's not beyond the realm that they could maybe even, you know, tip one of the chambers, you know, below that level. That would take some doing. I think it's a long shot because they have no money. But, you know, anything's possible. And so Salvey is taking control of a fractured party, hoping to bring it together, and she's got the background to hopefully, from the Republican perspective, do that.
Yeah, the House Republican leader, Tony McCombie, I believe this week, indicated she felt five seats could go from Democrats to Republicans. They could gain that much in this fall's election. We'll have to see. Even though it is a blue state, people sometimes, especially in the Chicago area, forget that downstate Illinois, much redder than people often will give it credit for. And so Trump likely will pull some votes here. Talking about money, Kent, that is your... forte when it comes to campaign finance. The Republican Party for the last few years had some pretty big donors helping fund things. Bruce Rauner, Ken Griffin, people like that. What about now? Is there money for this party? And that's got to be Kathy Salvey's, one of her biggest challenges going forward, finding a donor.
Yeah, raising money is a huge issue for them. You know, this state has changed dramatically in terms of its demographics over the last 30 years. And the same thing has happened in terms of the funding basis of the two parties. You know, the manufacturing business base of the Republican Party has atrophied, and money follows power. You know, that in the last go, right, in 2022, when you look at legislative candidates, statewide candidates, more business money went to Democrats than Republicans. That becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, because, you know, the Democrats have all the power. So, you know, they have to win back the suburbs. And they've lost the suburbs on social issues, abortion, guns, and demographic change. The suburbs are much more diverse than they were 30 years ago. And so if it is Darren Bailey's party, in downstate Illinois' party, the Democrats are going to continue to win and win handily. They've got to find a way to find candidates and a message that resonates in the suburbs, because, you know, the Chicago suburban Cook vote, the downstate Cook vote, about the same in terms of a statewide election. The Cook County vote, Chicago suburban Cook, much more Democratic than downstate is Republican, and the Republicans used to win the suburbs. Now every county board in those collar counties is controlled by the Democrats. So there is a huge hole. You know, they've got to find a way to rebuild their base absent the billionaire. You know, what really dominates money besides the bill dominates politics in terms of money is union money, and particularly trade union money. The Democrats just get an overwhelming amount of that money in terms of the private sector money that comes in. And then they have to find candidates, people that are attractive. If we're nominating someone with a profile like Darren Bailey, that's very difficult to win a statewide election, very difficult to claw back suburban seats if the issues are, you know, gun control, abortion, you know, those kinds of, you know, those kinds of issues. And so, you know, it is going to be difficult. And, you know, the new chairman is from the suburbs. She understands the suburbs. You know, they've got to find some way to, you know, to come back from that. You know, if you drive people like the former Republican leader Durkin, you know, out of politics, you know, the House leader, you know, that's not a recipe for long-term success if you're trying to win majorities in the legislature or statewide.
Now, Ken, you mentioned trade unions, especially, and funding of the Democrats. Well, the money certainly may still go to Democrats, but I keep seeing more and more polling showing that the Republicans, Donald Trump especially, really is seeming to make inroads with a lot of union workers. And so that vote not necessarily shored up for Democrats, of course. And it was a very populist message at times that was coming out of this Republican convention, very un-GOP-like, I should say, from what we've seen in past conventions. Is that labor coalition breaking down for Democrats?
Oh, I think it's tougher than it used to be, and labor is not as strong as it was. And you have to contrast, you know, national with Illinois. You know, I mean, we have a workers' rights amendment in the state constitution. We just went from a 4-3 to a 5-2 majority in the state Supreme Court. We have super majorities in the legislature, a governor that has, you know, a multi-billionaire governor. So, you know, the short term, that's a huge, huge hill to climb. Long term, you know, you still got to win votes, and you've got to have a message that speaks to, you know, speaks to the electorate. An anti-labor, which there is a lot of that in part of the Republican message, does not play well in a big part of Illinois.
You're listening to State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield. Our guests are Dave McKinney, a reporter for WBEZ, and also Kent Redfield, professor emeritus. Dave, we were just talking about how the convention, a little bit more of a populist message coming out there.
Well, yeah, clearly. I mean, you know, the idea that you have the president of the International Teamsters Union, Sean O'Brien, speaking in front of a gathering of Republicans, that in itself is telling. I mean, his speech, I thought was interesting in that it didn't represent an outright endorsement of Trump, but it was significant because of his presence there. And so I think, you know, that to your point there and Kent's point about the union issue, I think that's something to watch. But I was struck during the former president's speech Thursday night about how, you know, he didn't delve into Roe versus Wade. He didn't delve into, you know, abortion so much. I mean, there were other kind of hot button issues he touched, but that was one that didn't really get much prominence from him in his speech. And I think it's interesting how he has tried to, you know, on one hand, take credit for that because it's so important to his evangelical base. But on the other hand, in order to appeal to suburban voters, particularly women, Abortion rights is an issue that's near and dear to many of their hearts. And so downplaying that, I think, is important. And plus, you know, I mean, on a local level, you know, if you look at what, like, just successful Illinois Republicans in the past have always sort of done this fiscally conservative, socially moderate stance to win statewide office. And I can't say that, you know, I can't say that that was on Trump's radar, certainly. I'm still convinced it's the way for Republicans to win statewide office here. But you saw in Trump a little bit how I think he was trying, you know, his speech was being billed ahead of time as a more moderate tone. At times it didn't go that direction, certainly. But I think, you know, they clearly feel like they're playing with the lead right now. They are watching a Democratic Party kind of consume itself over its nominee. I mean, we have never in my lifetime ever seen a situation like this so close to a nominating convention where the party isn't settled yet on squarely behind the incumbent. And that's just until the Democrats get that straightened out, I think the Republicans are playing with the lead here.
We're about a month away, I guess, from the Democratic National Convention in Chicago. And if things continue, if Joe Biden decides to stay in, and even if there aren't any more gaffes or embarrassing moments for him between now and then, I can't imagine what that convention will actually be like. It seems as though a lot of enthusiasm that might have been there early has been tempered. So, Dave, let's turn to the Democrats then. Joe Biden, I mean, from what you saw with Republicans this week, and I think the mood in the Republican Party, it's just not there on the Democratic side. Is something going to happen? Do you think something's going to happen here soon?
It's an exceptionally fluid situation. I mean, by all appearances, Biden recovering from COVID remains dug in and doesn't believe that the data exists to warrant him stepping aside in what would really be an extraordinary political moment. But the reality is, when you have pretty much every senior member of the Democratic Party in one way or another, you know, pushing him to reconsider that, you know, Nancy Pelosi especially, I mean, she seems to be the one spearheading this, but you know, from reporting I've seen, the Obamas are factors here. You don't outside of the statement that Obama put out right after Biden's, you know, disastrous debate performance, we haven't heard anything at all from the former president about sticking up for Biden. So I think that's significant. I just think that the party is exceptionally unsettled now, and they've all seen internal polling and public polling that shows slippage, and that means, you know, that means problems at the top. It's a problem for Democrats in their bid to retake the House and to hold the Senate. You know, here in Illinois, we've had four congressmen who have gone on record to say that they think Biden should step aside. The most latest being Congressman Sean Casten from the western suburbs. He penned an op-ed in the Chicago Tribune Friday morning that, you know, said now is the time he has to do this for his country. Casten joins Representative Brad Schneider from the northern suburbs, Representative Mike Quigley from the city, and then out far, in the Quad Cities area, Representative Eric Sorensen. He's he is certainly one of the top targeted congressmen in the Democratic Party. The Republicans are aiming for him. And I think that, you know, Nikki Budzinski in central Illinois may have an issue with this as well, because, you know, a chunk of her district takes in, you know, big swaths of red territory. So, you know, we're seeing Democrats here in a position that they are exceptionally uncomfortable with. And there has to, you just sense that the powder keg is about to blow. And that could lead to a whole new set of assumptions, because, you know, just assume the scenario unfolds where Biden does step aside. You know, all of the Biden bashing that Republicans built this convention around and have spent 2 years basically, you know, formulating a campaign around changes. You know, the dynamic, they'll have to on the fly develop a new strategy against whoever would succeed Biden. And, you know, here in Illinois, we all wonder, could Governor J.B. Pritzker fit into that equation somehow? He's been an ardent supporter of the president's, but if you listen to him carefully, his language has subtly been changing, and it's starting to fill up now with qualifiers. He was asked in Decatur on Thursday about his support of the president, and he said that he's, you know, he supports the nominee, and right now it's Joe Biden. So I mean, you hear that from him, but certainly he has not quashed any kind of narrative about him wanting to perhaps run for president or maybe be on the ticket of whoever the nominee is. So that's something that bears close watching here in Illinois. And for Pritzker, I mean, the other challenge here, besides you know, the uncertainty over whether Biden will step aside, is the fact that, you know, he is not well known outside of Illinois. I mean, there was a poll that was done earlier this month by Reuters Ipsos that looked at the potential field of successors should Biden step aside. It didn't contain a lot of good news for Pritzker. You know, it ranked him sixth, you know, dead last among a group that included Michelle Obama, Kamala Harris, Gavin Newsom, the California governor, Gretchen Whitmer, the Michigan governor, and Andy Beshear, the Kentucky governor, in terms of favorability. And then also, you know, he stood to, you know, it looked like it, at the moment, a decisive loss in a head-to-head matchup with Trump. The other revealing piece of this poll that I found interesting was that 75% of the people surveyed didn't know who J.B. Pritzker was. So that's a big question mark for him. I mean, of course, he has money. He's a billionaire, could you know, and pour tons of resources into a presidential campaign. But I think right now his biggest challenge, if Biden steps aside, is will people outside the state turn to him first and view him as kind of the savior?
Pritzker has a situation where he is really wanting this Democratic National Convention to go over well. And if Biden still is the nominee at that point, he doesn't want to, I think, do anything that could possibly sink that going forward. But Kent, I heard one of the pollsters, Republican pollster, Frank Lutz, who always seems to have a pretty good handle on a lot of these things. And he said on NPR this week that he had not seen a major party, a Democratic Party candidate at least, in such bad shape at this point of the campaign in a long time. Does he have a choice here really to stay in, or is it just going to build this type of pressure on him that something's going to have to give?
Well, would be a huge risk for him to withdraw and the Democrats go with a new candidate, probably Kamala Harris at this point. But I don't think you can look at the data and you can look at the way the president acts and is perceived and have any confidence. A lot of the Democrats believe that, you know, we're just, you know, one public meltdown away sometime in the next 3 months. You know, that's going to happen. And then it will be, you know, a total disaster. And so, you know, in the spirit of, you know, last night's kind of macho setup for the president's speech, in football terms, you know, you're down two touchdowns in the fourth quarter, the ground game's not working. You know, you can pack it in, or you can roll out the substitute quarterback and throw the Hail Mary. And so, I think that's becoming more and more likely, but it is, you know, either one is fraught with danger, and, you know, changing candidates could even be a bigger disaster than what we're seeing now. And, you know, the problem with this having Illinois impact is that, you know, you need to recruit good candidates and build campaigns before the primary. And so the Republicans in lots of districts are stuck with placeholders that have, no money, no presence, nothing. And so, you know, they really aren't in a position to take, you know, to take advantage of the opportunity. You know, if you've got people that are on the ticket that haven't raised $0 since they've been, won the Republican nomination. You're not going to get a lot of people that are going to go out and vote, not when they've got an incumbent Republican, a Democrat on the ballot who, has done the kind of incumbent things in terms of name recognition and all of those sorts of things. And that's, that's difficult to beat without money, without a campaign. So it's, but it is, I agree completely. I mean, this is just uncharted territory, and we have, it is a risk either way for however the Democrats fall on this. They could get killed either way.
Just a couple of minutes left here. Let's turn our attention to something else that has occurred here in the last couple of weeks or so, and that is the U.S. Supreme Court decision involving a bribery statute could impact Michael Madigan's case. Madigan's still set to go to trial this fall on corruption charges. Dave, what is the latest on this? Because there was some more movement here in the last several days.
This all kind of stems from U.S. Supreme Court decision in late June involving a bribery case in Northwest Indiana. A former mayor there, took a $13,000 payment from a contractor for the city that he represented. The feds charged and convicted this mayor with bribery. And what the Supreme Court did was reverse that conviction on the basis that because there was no established quid pro quo, and the payment came after the official act of awarding contracts to this vendor that gave the mayor the money after the fact, but that didn't constitute bribery. And so that has had an enormous sort of trickle-down effect here in Illinois, where the U.S. Attorney's Office in Chicago has used this particular bribery statute to charge and convict the defendants in the ComEd 4 case. And then that's a big basis for the case that's pending against former Speaker Madigan. Now, that trial is due to get underway with Madigan on October 8th, and that seems like it's still going to hold. But this week, what happened, the defense lawyers citing this case in Northwest Indiana, known as Snyder, they said that the judge in Madigan's case should knock out 14 of the 23 counts pending against Madigan. That essentially would gut the indictment against him. But the feds, they have made this decision not to re-indict Madigan, and they're just going to play with the hand that they're dealt. So I think it's going to be a really interesting couple of weeks here to watch what U.S. District Judge John Blakey does with this defense motion about tossing out some of these counts. Now, I think it's probably highly likely some of them will fall by the wayside. Whether they're all 14 go or not, I don't know. But certainly the defense lawyers in Madigan and in the ComEd case are feeling a lot of confidence now that their cases are going to be, recast entirely as a result of this U.S. Supreme Court opinion.
All right. Well, we'll continue to follow that, and we're out of time for this episode of State Week. Our guests were Dave McKinney of WBEZ and Professor Emeritus Kent Redfield. Find our shows where you get your podcasts through the NPR app and at nprillinois.org. I'm Sean Crawford. Join us next time.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.